we'll be playing too.
That's right. The Recklin Community Cup is on this Sunday. I'll be playing in there too. So if you're interested in coming down and watching me make a fool of myself, come down to the Henson Park on Sunday afternoon for the Recklin Community Cup. You are on 2CR's Daily. Now, Sydney's medical injection rooms have always been a point of controversy, even back in before its establishment in 1999. These are rooms where people can safely use illicit intravenous substances under medical supervision. The services are dividing Parliament markedly, with some not wanting to commit to their future, and others encouraging an extension of the services. Here to discuss the issue is Dr. Marianne Jauncey. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be speaking with you.
Now, could you explain your role and why you're involved with the injecting rooms?
So I'm the medical director at the Uniting Medically Supervised Injecting Service in King's Cross, and I've been there for 8 years now, although I started working in King's Cross nearly 20 years ago. And I guess the first thing to say is that this is a service that reaches out to some of the most vulnerable and has a very good record in terms of evidence of being able to save people's lives and being able to intervene and engage with quite a disengaged group of people that are already falling through the cracks of our health and social welfare services. And so the job of a service like ours is really to link these people in with treatment and with support and get them into rehabilitation, get them into drug treatment, ensure they don't get bloodborne viruses, ensure they don't die of overdose, ensure they get all sorts of other treatment and care and support. So although we're most known as being the service where it is legal to be able to inject drugs, actually a large part of what we do is all of those other wraparound services designed to really give people the best chance at life.
And that's right. And that's why these injecting rooms exist. And not only for the medical supervision, but because it can be the only sort of method of support for these people who are obviously not in a space that they're happy with. They don't want to be in that sort of situation. But sometimes people just reach that point, unfortunately.
That's exactly right. You know, I've never met a child who, you know, going through primary school when they're asked what they want to be when they grow up says, oh, gee, I want to be homeless. I want to have untreated schizophrenia and I want to be heroin dependent. Mm. You know, we're talking about some people who've had some pretty traumatic childhood experiences often, which have led them to where they are. Not always, but that is certainly, you know, very common amongst the people we see. And we've been providing clean injecting equipment in this country to people who inject drugs. We've been doing that for nearly 30 years. Wow. And as a result of that, we have the lowest rate of HIV amongst people who inject drugs, really of anywhere in the world. And that is something Australia should be extremely proud of. Mm. What our service does is, apart from just providing the clean injecting equipment and then telling people to go away, it acknowledges the inherent reality that we've given them the clean equipment to keep them safe from bloodborne virus transmission. Surely, to provide some additional care and support, a roof over their head, clinical nurses designed to help, counsellors trained in order to engage, that way we can do so much more. So that's really what our service is about going the extra mile to try and help these people.
Now, there's been discussion recently about whether the services should be extended or actually reduced. Can you tell us about what's happening in that space?
So there seems to be some controversy at the moment in relation to the statutory review. So there is a review going on of the legislation that allows us to operate legally. And one of the things that a number of different medical organisations, scientific organisations, research organisations, clinical groups have called for, along with us, is that very infrequently, and thank heavens it's infrequently, but very infrequently we see both pregnant women and somebody who may be 16 or 17 who's come to our service. It is clearly distressing. It is shocking beyond belief that we live in a world where somebody who is pregnant and may be living on the street and may be in incredibly dire circumstances with no access to antenatal care is also injecting drugs. I understand how shocking that is. Mm. But what I believe, along with the considered opinion of all of the medical people that I've spoken to about this and all of the specialist support services that look at pregnant women, is that at the point that she's already injecting drugs, already dependent on heroin, already purchased the drugs for use then and there, if she makes it to the only place in Australia where we have that capacity to provide additional treatment and support, surely we should be able to let her in. Now, I am truly as distressed as anyone. You know, we are the staff that see these women in incredibly vulnerable, desperate circumstances. And what we know after 15 years of operation, although it's very rare, thank heavens that it happens, when she does present, my chances of really being able to connect and engage with her and thus be successful about getting her onto treatment, which is my primary aim, is if after some conversation, if she's intent on using, I ensure sitting beside her that is done as safely as possible, and then I continue the conversation. Then I can jump in a cab with her and take her to treatment. Then I can get a priority place on treatment. Then I can walk with her to those specialist treatment services, and the chances of successful outcome are greatly increased if I can be with her during that period of time. Unfortunately, when it happens and she is unable to use the service, despite our best efforts of engagement and, you know, trying to offer those services without her being able to come in and use, the reality is we've lost her. She turns around and she walks out that door, and she may never be seen again until she presents in labour. What I'm saying is, let us try. If at the point that she's already pregnant, already an established drug user, already having bought the drugs, then the best efforts of police, of health, of social services, of everybody else has failed. Let me try and help.
Indeed, indeed. Is the future of injecting rooms actually under threat, or is the funding still exist?
Look, I don't know. Until recently, I had no reason to think that the future of the service was under threat. I'm pleased to hear the commitment to acting based on the evidence, as was committed to by Minister Goward yesterday in question time. And I can very confidently say there would not be another health service in this state with more direct evidence as to the effectiveness and cost effectiveness of what it does. We have repeatedly been shown to be effective at saving lives, effective at getting people into treatment, effective at reaching out, stopping the transmission of bloodborne viruses, and engaging with a really hard-to-reach population in a cost-effective manner. So I'm very confident in the evidence, which has been clearly documented over 15 years, as to why there seems to be a suggestion, for example, that, quote, we're trying to drum up business by seeking to reach out to the most vulnerable members of the injecting population. You know, I guess I can say that I find that very hurtful and professionally offensive, because, you know, having done a medical degree and a specialist degree, you know, I would never, ever seek to encourage anyone to inject drugs. I see the devastation wreaked in people's lives more than anyone. You know, my job is to reach out and try and help. That's all.
Indeed, indeed. Now, changing tack a little, and I'm not sure if you are aware, but the issue of ice smoking rooms has been raised recently, with drug law reformers talking of setting up rooms in the face of government opposition. Is this something you're aware of?
I am aware of those discussions, yeah.
Do you think it's a good idea that they should go ahead with these sort of things?
So the notion of a safe space where people can take drugs in a different way has been around for a long time. A lot of the injecting facilities that operate in Europe don't just allow injecting, they allow other routes of administration. Obviously, when you're talking about a drug like ice, we were primarily set up to save people's lives because people were dropping like flies from heroin overdose, three people a day, you know, in the year of the drug summit. So people don't die of an overdose on ice the same way they do on heroin. So the inherent aims of such a service would be very different. However, we need to understand that we're not connecting with these people. And so cautious, careful, evaluated services that seek to reduce the shame and stigma and discrimination and allow for opportunities of early engagement should be investigated.
Indeed. And I guess because ICE is sort of the drug that is in the news a lot lately, people are sort of talking about the expansion of that sort of thing. I see it as sort of a similar, you know, although, like you say, you don't overdose on ice as you do with heroin, it seems to be that there's a similar challenges around it and trying to support the people who are hooked on that stuff. And if you can give them some sort of space area, safe space and support, then it will be a positive thing.
It could well be. The key aims of any service that seeks to make contact with people that aren't, you know, already engaged with the services is about reducing that shame and discrimination and opportunities for early intervention. We know in the small number of stimulant treatment programs that operate already in this state that on average people are coming after more than a decade of use. And so anything that we can do to speak to, engage and capture this population earlier is worthwhile looking into. There is, I think, some concerns being expressed about the inherent violence. And what I would say is certainly ice has been associated with violence, as has alcohol. So I am in no way minimising the association between this drug and violence, but what I would say is it is certainly not automatic and it is certainly not inevitable. We see people injecting ice at our centre, and we have done for years. When I looked and just went through literally the last 2 years' worth of incident reports, there was not a single one that was associated with ice use in our service, despite the fact that we see thousands of injections of ice. So it matters a lot how you treat people, and it matters a lot the training and skill and experience of your staff. So I would, you know, for people that are concerned about the idea that these would be violent, unsafe services, clearly that would be unacceptable, and that would I believe, would not automatically necessarily occur.
Sure, sure. Well, thank you very much for talking to us today. I think it's a very, very important service that you provide, and good luck with the future, and thank you for talking to us today on 2SER.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. That was Dr. Marianne Jauncey, from a medical director at the Sydney Medically Supervised Injecting Centre, just talking about how important their service is, what they do, and future of injecting rooms. You're on 2SER with Mick Radd. We're racing up to the 10 o'clock news to get us there. And I'll talk a little bit more about what's up next hour after the news. We've got King Creosote. This is called Wake Up to This on 2SER.